ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 105 of the report. Yeah, man, it's been a good week since the last time I talked to you guys, man. Been a much better week for me than it was last week. You know what I mean? Like, your man Span had to be the angry guy at the job. So, yeah, man, it was a whole lot better at work over the course of this past week as opposed to what it was like the week before, man. But, yeah, man, I'm good. I'm happy about a lot of things, man. Got a lot of things to talk to you guys about today. And we're going to get into that, man. We got a few things, man. One of the things I want to talk about is I got into a little bit of a spat, man. I got into it with Azealia Banks on Twitter. A little spat. Not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about it, but we're going to kind of chop it up about that. Also want to talk about, excuse me, I got some, like, I don't know what's going on here. But I wanted to kind of follow up on the FBI versus Apple thing that's going on right now as far as the encryption and whatnot. I wanted to follow up on how the politics around that fall along party lines, man. I want to talk about a bit about that today. Also, we got some asshats of the week. We also have a champ of the week and celebrity political endorsements, man. I kind of want to talk a little bit about that and whether or not those things are actually effective, if at all. So, yeah, man, before we get into all of that, before we get into the rigmarole of the show, let me let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard, man. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages here on the show, and of course, I'll respond in kind. You can also email the show at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Send me those emails, and of course, we will read those emails here on the show live as well. Give me a review on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Got a couple of reviews that I need to read, and I'm sorry that it's taken me a while to get to them. Didn't even know they were there. But yeah, iTunes and or Stitcher reviews, preferably 5 stars. Those get read here on the show. Send me your tweets. Yeah, send me your tweets. Follow your man on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span, man. So go ahead and follow me on both of those platforms. We can chop it up throughout the week. Give me your ass hat of the week submissions, man. For all of those people you think need to be clowned, yeah, we do that here. So go ahead and send me those ass hat of the week submissions. We'll talk about those people right here on the show. And another thing, man, subscribe. You can subscribe to the show. When you want to watch the show live, you can subscribe to the show here on Spreecast, man. This is something that I've started to do. I've transitioned away from doing the show on YouTube. So, yeah, man, subscribe to the show. You'll get email alerts when I schedule a show. You'll also get an email alert for when the show goes live, man. So, yeah, man, go ahead, subscribe to the show on Spreecast, and you can watch and participate in the show live as we do it. You know, there's a chat room here. You can present questions here, and that's yet another way for you to get your feedback and your questions heard, man. It's another way to let your voice be heard as we do here on the Span Report, man. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. All of the podcasts are available there. All of the sound clips that I use for these shows are available there. Yeah, man, everything Span Report related is available at www.thespanreport.com. And finally, if you'd like, you can donate to the show. There's a donate button on thespanreport.com, and you can go there, hit the donate tab. It'll send you to PayPal, and you can set it up to where you can donate one time, or you can set up recurring donations, man. And every little bit that you donate to the show helps immensely, and I appreciate everything that you guys will send, or if you do send, I appreciate all of that in advance, man. Real talk, it helps the show immensely. Got some things that I really want to do with the show, and it would help to kind of have some of that some of that financial support. So, yeah, man, appreciate you guys who go ahead and do that. But, yeah, let's get right into this show, man. Let's get right into it, man. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about this week, man, was the fact that, like I said, I got into it a little bit with Azealia Banks on Twitter, right? And like I said, this is it's not going to be a real long segment. It's one of those things where I wanted to kind of speak to a little something that I noticed, right? And now it actually kind of lends into some of the things that I talked about with that Tommy Laren lady from The Blaze, right? So one of the things that Twitter affords you is the ability to put your thoughts out there. And sometimes your thoughts, especially when you actually talk to some of these people who you at once thought was inaccessible, right? And every now and again, I know when it comes to someone who's a celebrity, they get a lot of people talking at them, they get a lot of people talking good things about them, they get a lot of people talking bad things about them. And that's the gift and the curse that comes with Twitter. You know, like, you're going to get people who are, you know, who love you and love everything you do. And then you're going to also have a whole lot of motherfuckers who don't necessarily like you and everything else, right? Now, I don't have a dislike of Azealia Banks, right? As odd as this is going to sound, I don't dislike Azealia Banks. I think Azealia Banks is, I think sometimes she does some things that aren't necessarily necessary, but that's just from my sensibilities, right? You know, I might not necessarily find what she does necessary, but, you know, who am I to say, right? But one of the things that I said something last Sunday, and this is after I did episode 104, which is why I didn't speak about it then. But I said that, you know, the funny thing, the sad thing about Azealia Banks, and this is what I tweeted out, and I actually tagged Azealia Banks in this tweet, and I said, the sad thing about Azealia Banks is that I know her more for her antics on Twitter than for any music she may have produced, right? Now, what I said, I don't necessarily think I'm the only one who feels that way, right? When it comes to Azealia Banks, I hear a lot about some of the things that have gone on outside of the music, like biting a woman on the breast and calling the police on them, like offering a producer $40 to produce a beat. You know, as like she just went after Rihanna for saying that Rihanna has mediocre music. And it's like one of those things where I mean, she had the whole thing with, I want to say it was Iggy Azalea. She had that whole thing about Iggy Azalea and calling out T.I. and everything else. Now, that's one of those things where, you know what, like you can kind of be like, yeah, I kind of agree with you on that one. But at the same time, it's like for me personally, I hadn't heard of any Azealia Banks' music. I really hadn't heard of any of it outside of having to go to YouTube and maybe doing a search. But it wasn't as if Azealia Banks' music was like accessible to a lot of people like that. If you had to actively go search for Azealia Banks' music in order to hear it. And that's part of the thing that, you know, I was kind of trying to get across, but it didn't, you know, I guess that shit fell flat, right? So Azealia Banks responded to me on Twitter and she said, "That's because you're a stupid American who was bred on media and you have not the mental capacity to go beyond gossip." Right? Now, again, I just talked about how you have to go and search for Azealia Banks' music. I didn't come at Azealia Banks in what I thought was a disrespectful way, although I'm pretty sure I can understand why she thought what I was saying was disrespectful, but it wasn't so much about being disrespectful. It was more so like, hey, man, like, I would really like to know something about Azealia Banks outside of these things that keep happening on Twitter with her. Like, I'm really trying to find out, has anybody ever rolled up on any of my listeners, right? If any of you guys who listen to my show, any friends of mine who listen to this or whatever, has any of you guys ever had somebody roll up on you like, yo, you heard that new Azealia Banks, man? That shit go hard. Uh-oh. Nope.
Not never.
No. I fucked that up real bad. I really did. But yeah, man, like, I've never heard anybody just talk about the merits of Azealia Banks' artistry and her music. It's always something that have to do with Azealia Banks and all of the other surrounding bullshit around that. And so, you know, my thing was this, like, I'm not really tripping off the shit that Azealia Banks said, because she actually went in on my podcast. She went in on the couch and everything that's sitting behind me right here. Like, she tried to clown, right? And I'm just like, okay, whatever. Now, here's the thing that I really do want to speak to, right? Because the whole shit with Azealia Banks was petty and it was small. The fans, right? Now, the reason that I say this kind of ties into what the whole thing with Tommy Lauren was, you know, Tommy Lauren had a bit of a spat with the Beehive over some things she said about Beyonce and her Super Bowl performance, right? And, you know, she went on her show to say that she was getting all these Twitter threats and these people threatening her life and all of these things, man. And I kind of questioned the validity of that. You know, I mean, I understand that there can be some pretty rabid fans and everything else, but I started to question some of the validity of that because she never really showed anybody any evidence of that happening. She never put anybody out on, you know, on blast to say like, hey, this is what this person said. And she may have very well handled that shit, you know, privately or whatever else. I don't know. But it just seemed a little odd to me that it seemed like one of those things where folks kind of try to silence the dissenters, so to speak. Right. So, of course, it's Twitter. Azealia Banks is somewhat of a celebrity. And she's, you know, her fans, after she retweeted what I said and then responded to me, of course, her fans are like, you know, they're like, oh, you know, like she really got at me. And I'm looking at it like, okay, you know, like it's not really a big deal to me. I'm sitting on my couch. I'm watching television. My dog is chilling. I'm eating cold pizza. Like I'm chilling. Like it's really not that big a deal, right? And so the thing that I'm really trying to get at when it comes to like the fans is that I wish that I loved someone who I didn't know the way that a lot of people or a lot of fans loved their idols. You know, I wish I loved someone that much. Like I had a 14-year-old kid coming at me, man, talking really reckless, man. Like he called me. He said I was acting like a cunt. He started talking shit about my daughter and everything. So I'm like, you need to fall back, man. You need to erase those tweets. Like, come on, kid. Like, that wasn't me going off. Trust me. It's just nothing. And he took offense at the fact that I pointed out that he was 14 and I'm not engaging in an argument with him. And there was another thing where folks were talking about that the reason that I even did that was to promote my podcast when I hadn't even mentioned my podcast at all. She did. You know, so like it wasn't even so much about my podcast. It was just like, hey, man, like I don't really know of a whole lot of people that talk much about you when it comes to your music. Always hearing about you in some bullshit, though. And like right after that came the whole thing with Rihanna. So, you know, one of the things about arguing or having a spat with, you know, someone on like especially a celebrity on Twitter, like one thing is true. Like the follower count determines who wins an argument, no matter what, right? So I don't have as many followers as Azealia Banks has followers. As much as they would like to believe that Azealia Banks was really fucking me up, like I'm looking at it like this is what y'all are, you know, this is what y'all think is a fuck up. This is what y'all think is somebody snatching a wig. This is what y'all think is like a clapback. Like it was mild at best. Like I'm like, okay, that was creative. Good for you, right? And then too, there's the assumptions that are made about you, right? Like the assumptions that were made that I was somehow trying to use that to promote this show. Like, nah, man, like that had nothing to do with it at all. And so, I saw people who like started making all these assumptions about me. Like, you know, the only reason he's saying that is because he's got this podcast and he thinks this is going to make him relevant and everything else. And like, well, damn, I never said anything like that. And there was this one person who was going on for 10 minutes arguing with somebody else about me, about a tweet that I said about her. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I wish I cared enough. I wish I loved someone enough. And I wish I loved someone's artistry enough to go that hard over somebody I don't know in an argument that didn't include me, right? I wish I loved someone that much. I wish, and a lot of it is basically when it comes to fandom, and there's nothing wrong with being a fan of anybody, but when it comes to fandom, a lot of it, especially on social media, is revolving around folks really trying to find out whether or not they can seek So, or they can get some sort of positive acknowledgement from this person whom they hold up, right? So coming at me and saying all these reckless things about me, saying that Azealia Banks fucks my mother and stuff like that, and if Azealia Banks is into necrophilia, then that's very much possible. But, you know, like, coming at me saying all these reckless things, thinking that somehow, some way that Azealia Banks is going to pat you on the head for saying these things and big up you and all of that other stuff. Like, that's pretty much what it boils down to. And I understand that. Same thing with Tommy Lawrence. Like, you kind of have to understand that a lot of these people who may be saying some really, really reckless things about you because you said something about Beyonce really are saying that because they're trying, some of them are seeking some acknowledgement from Beyonce herself or Azealia Banks herself. So, yeah, man, that's pretty much how I dealt with that. You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of looked at that like, okay, this is kind of silly, and it boiled over like a little longer than I thought it would. Like, I had people tweeting me or retweeting me like 3 days later about some innocuous ass tweet about whether or not Azealia Banks is known more for the bullshit she's involved in as opposed to her music. So yeah, man, like I thought that was something that was a bit interesting. It was something that kind of kicked off my week this week, so I thought it was something that I should talk about, man. But that's done. That's done. Yeah, man. Now, another thing that I wanted to talk about was the fact that, you know, me and, my boy Wendell of the Theory Studios Incorporated, we talked a little bit about, we talked about the Apple versus the FBI, thing that's going on right now, whereas the FBI is trying to get, Apple to, come up with a backdoor solution to break into the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone, right? And so, of course, Apple is saying that they don't want to do it because it would, you know, make other iPhones vulnerable. And the FBI is saying that they want to do it because, of course, this is a this is an issue of national security. This would be a one-time thing that this, however Apple decide or however Apple somehow executes the however they execute how they break into the phone would be pretty much an isolated incident, right? It'd be an isolated event. It won't get into the wrong hands. And this is what's good for the country and everything else, right? And, you know, one of the things that I was wondering about, you know, was how the attitude about whether or not Apple should, you know, somehow create this back door for the FBI to break into the iPhone, how that broke down demographically and politically, right? And so I came across an article, I believe this article was in The Verge, and The Verge had an article, and they talked about there was this this Washington, D.C. firm called Morning Consult, and they conducted a poll. And in the poll, they said that 51% of all Americans pretty much side with the FBI on this particular issue. So like right now, majority of Americans think that Apple should acquiesce and give the FBI access or come up with the back door so that the FBI can get access to the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone, right? Now, 33% side with Apple, right? Only 33% of all Americans are siding with Apple in this particular case, and 16% were simply unsure. But 54% of respondents also think that making this data available would also make it less secure, make all of our data less secure if Apple was to go about doing that, right? So it's like this whole thing of, are we going to balance our personal data with safety, right? Like, we give up this data, but it's going to make us safe by giving up this data. Uh-oh, hold on a second. Tyrone, chill out. Hey. All right. Sorry about that. Pup's going over here losing his mind. But yeah, so, you know, we're basically this, there's this balancing act of whether or not we give up our personal information on the trade-off of we're going to be more secure, we're going to be more safe, right? Now, of the people who are self-identified Republican voters, overwhelmingly, 57%, nearly 60% of Republican voters tend to think that Apple should give up that information, that Apple should go ahead and, you know, create that back door. 49%, nearly half of Democratic, self-identified Democratic voters also agree with the FBI on this, right? Now, one of the things that kind of made me think about was the fact that we have, you know, as I've kind of watch this political landscape kind of shape itself, especially concerning like the presidential candidates and the way in which that race has been running. One of the things I've kind of noticed is the fact that there, when it comes to the Republican electorate, is that to me, it appears that the Republican electorate is a very scared group of people. They are a petrified group of people. And the reason that I say that is, like, when you start talking about, like, one of the, you know, some of the things that are very important on the list of issues for voters in America, terrorism is one of the top concerns for Republican voters, and the economy tends to be one of the top concerns for a lot of Democratic voters, right? But not only that, you start thinking about, you know, them being scared of terrorism, the attitudes towards immigration when it comes to banning Muslims from coming into the country until they can figure this thing out, whether or not that be building a wall on the border of the United States and Mexico, whether or not they're scared of becoming of, you know, the growing political power of minority groups. You know, because the Hispanic vote is becoming more and more important. The African-American vote is being courted more and more. And they're projecting that the United States is going to be a majority minority country by the year 2050. There's a lot of scared white, evangelical, older, conservative voters. There's a block of scared voters, scared of all of this change that's happening. And this is why a candidate like Donald Trump, who says we're going to make this country great again, resonates with a lot of these people, because one, he's saying something that they believe in. He's saying something that's not politically correct. He's saying something that speaks to their sensibilities, and they're feeling like they're losing this country, which is why they think America isn't great right now. They feel like they're losing it. And it was great when they had their position of power and their position of influence and their position of means, when they had control of this country. And they're seeing other people gaining, you know, gaining some of the things in which they've always enjoyed. And they see that as a power struggle, and they feel as if they're going to lose this country, that this country is just going to hell in a handbasket because other people are also having opportunities afforded to them that they've always enjoyed, right? And I think a lot of it, too, has to do with a bit of retribution, or being scared of retribution, being scared that if African-Americans and Latino voters, or African-Americans and Latinos, period, are become a majority in this country, that they're going to start seeing some of the, you know, they're going to start reaping some of the backlash of what, you know, some of these, they're going to start reaping some of the backlash of how systemically America has kept a lot of these minority groups down. And because they would now be a minority group, they're scared of, okay, we've done these people wrong for so long, you know, it's time to pay the piper. You know, the chickens are coming home to roost, and here's why. You know, I think a lot of their voters tend to be a scared block, man. Really, you know, and you think about, you know, when I talk about like this Apple and versus the, you know, the FBI, you know, I think about back to the year 2001, man, right after 9/11, and how we had the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, and how we had the creation of the Patriot Act, and how that led to unprecedented power for the President of the United States to authorize military aggression against other countries without declaring war, and not getting the approval of the Congress to declare war. You know what I mean? So it was like we started to do away with the Constitution in a way that we never had before. We started to give up certain rights. We started to give up certain privacies and liberties. We started to give up a lot of those things under the guise of being more secure, right? We needed these tools to be more secure. So you started having wireless wiretaps happening. You started having your library history and the things that you read scoured over. You started having, you know, a lot of Arab Americans started finding themselves being profiled in a much larger way than they were before. This country became scared. You know, we wanted security. We wanted retribution for what happened to this country and everything else. And so I look at that and I kind of juxtapose that with this, because it's one of those instances again where, okay, we're starting to give up a bit of this liberty for the promise of being more secure. And so it doesn't surprise me that nearly 60% of Republican voters tend to think that Apple should give up this information. Now, I'm conflicted in a bit, you know, to a large degree, because although I would love for the FBI to receive, you know, the information that's needed from that phone, I also just think that it's a dangerous precedent to set, because as much as the FBI would say that they don't necessarily want to make this available to everyone and this is a one-time thing, that doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen. It sets a dangerous precedent to where now everything is deemed a matter of national security. And, you know, you'll start having more and more requests come down the pipeline because of it. And it made me think about, as a matter of fact, earlier in the week, and I didn't save it. Earlier in the week, though, there was a story about a New York district attorney who also said he had 9 phones that after the FBI got through with their investigation and whatnot, that they had 9 phones that they wanted Apple to kind of break into. Now the FBI breaks into the San Bernardino's phone. Now we got the NYPD saying that they also want this kind of access so that they can go into some other phones. And of course, law enforcement agencies across the country are going to want access to this type of capability, to this type of information. And now it's a common thing. It's a precedent setting thing. So as much as I've never really been a fan of Apple in that way, I appreciate Apple standing up right now and being able to stand up to the government because they have the money to do so. Let's not get this twisted. All the money that y'all pay for them charges is paying for Apple to be able to say that, you know what, this is a dangerous precedent to set. We're violating the privacy rights of not only our consumers, but of Americans, period. And if we allow this to happen now, the floodgates will open. And so, I think it's probably clear that I'm on the side of Apple with this one. But I also thought it was, a bit interesting how it played out politically, because especially now when the rhetoric is like, you know, this is a matter of national security and we need this information in order to protect Americans and to protect the homeland and everything else. And it pits Apple and saying that Apple is on the side of terrorists. It's like, no. If you're really paying attention, Apple, ironically, is on the side of protecting your civil liberties. Ironically, a conglomerate company is on the side of protecting your civil liberties against the government. And it's an odd juxtaposition, considering that, it's usually the other way around sometimes, depending on, you know, what the issue is. But yeah, it's a real odd juxtaposition. And it's interesting, man. And I just wanted to kind of speak to that, kind of follow up on that. Another thing, too, that I wanted to talk about while we're talking politics, man. Bernie Sanders was just endorsed by Spike Lee. Now, of course, you guys know Spike Lee is a legendary director, actor. He's made plenty of films, man, like Malcolm X, Do the Right Thing. Mo Better Blues was one of my favorites. But he's had some misses also, like Chirac, that last movie. I've been saying fuck Spike Lee because of that movie for quite a minute now. I wondered this, right? So Spike Lee endorses Bernie Sanders and he comes up with a radio spot. And I'm going to play this spot here real quick so you guys can take a listen real just a second.
Wake up, South Carolina. This is your dude, Spike Lee. And I know that you know the system is rigged. For too long, we've given our votes to corporate puppets. Sold the okey-doke. 99% of Americans were hurt by the Great Recession of 2008, and many are still recovering. And that's why I'm officially endorsing my brother, Bernie Sanders. Bernie takes no money for corporations, nada, which means he is not on the take. And when Bernie gets in the White House, he will do the right thing. How can we be sure? Bernie was at the March on Washington with Dr. King. He was arrested in Chicago for protesting segregation and public schools. He fought for wealth and education equality throughout his whole career. No flipping, no flopping. Enough talk. Time for action. Hey, Bernie from Brooklyn. Talk to the folks.
I'm Bernie Sanders, Democratic candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Bernie 2016. Not the billionaires.
All right. Now, one of the things I've always wondered too, man, when it comes to political endorsements, and especially political endorsements of people whom are celebrities, right? Like, I've always wondered, like, how many of you guys have ever voted for anybody based on the fact that they were endorsed by your favorite celebrity.
It's not never, not never.
I can't think of anybody who's actually voted for anybody because of a celebrity endorsement. Now, and I don't think it necessarily translates, you know, in much the same way that, like, you know, product endorsements go, right? Like, you know, Michael Jordan endorses Nike, or Michael Jordan drinks Gatorade, and, you know, that translates into more sales for the, you know, for Gatorade and or Nike. I don't know if it necessarily translates to votes for candidates, unless, of course, you have a low information voter voting block, right? So I always kind of wondered, like, how many people, or why these endorsements were always considered important. Like, I know Bernie Sanders and also Hillary Clinton, they've been kind of, you know, they've really been courting the African-American vote. They've been going after, you know, some of the families. Like, they've been really courting the support of some of the families of recent victims of police brutality, like Eric Garner. I think his daughter, Erica Garner, is endorsing Bernie Sanders. The mother for Trayvon Martin, I believe she's endorsing Hillary Clinton. There was another endorsee. They're kind of splitting the families up as opposed, you know, when it comes to how they get their endorsements from these families and whatnot. And then you have the celebrity endorsements and whatnot. And I just always kind of wondered, like, how many people actually voted for a candidate simply because a celebrity and or somebody someone in pop culture you respected endorsed that candidate. So I got a poll up on thespanreport.com. You guys can go up to thespanreport.com right now on this episode 105, and I approve this message. And the poll for this episode is this. It says, have you ever voted for anyone based on celebrity endorsement? Go ahead and vote on that poll, and I'll announce those results on episode 106 when we get back to this next week. But yeah, man, I really want to know, has anyone ever done that? Like, because I always thought it was interesting why it was always something that people touted, you know. And yeah, like, I can't, it doesn't really jive with me. It's like one of those things where, like, you know, when I first heard that Spike Lee was endorsing Bernie Sanders, my thought was like, well, shit, that's all I need to know. Spike voting for him? That's all I needed. You know what I mean? Like, shit, Michael Jordan is voting for him? Oh, shit, that mean I need to vote for him too. Like, I've never understood if that ever worked that way. So, yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it may happen for some folks, but I really would like to know, man. So if you guys can really hit me up with some listener feedback and let me know, has that ever happened? You know, you can vote in the poll. You can send me an email. You can shoot me a voicemail. Let me know whether or not you've ever voted for anyone based on a celebrity endorsement, man. I really like to hear your feedback on that, real talk. Yeah, and we've come up to our segments here. And right now, we got our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Yeah, man. And this week's ass hat of the week is Republican candidate for president, Dr. Ben Carson. Now, Dr. Ben Carson he's slipped a lot in the polls. There was a time where Dr. Ben Carson was one of the front runners. I believe he is now running fourth or fifth out of five in the Republican primaries right now. And he tried to compare his blackness with that of President Obama's. And he went on, I believe it was PBS or something like that. I had the clip here. It's better that it comes out of his mouth than it does mine. So here we go.
And his sixth place standing in the polls is, for some reason, he is speaking about the president's race. Carson says Obama, quote, was raised white and can't really understand what it means to be black in America. Listen.
Like most Americans, I was proud that we broke the color barrier when he was elected. But I also recognize that his experience and my experience are night and day different. He didn't grow up like I grew up by any stretch of
the
imagination.
That's right.
Not even close.
He's an African American as opposed to an African American.
African American. He was, you know, raised white. Many of his formative years were spent in Indonesia. So for him to, you know, claim that, you know, he identifies with the experience of black Americans, I think, is a bit of a stretch.
All right. Now, one of the things that needs to be understood, man, and this is something that I think is very important, and I try to stress this as well, because I see this happening a lot when a lot of folks start talking about who's cooning and whatnot. You know, I try not to really question anyone's blackness. You know, that's something that I've had to kind of grow into. I try not to question anyone's blackness. And I thought it was a little petty of Dr. Carson to try to do that with President Obama, right? Another thing too, man, is like the black experience in America is not a monolithic one. My experience in America hasn't necessarily been the exact same as Dr. Carson's experience in America. And I was born on the south side of Chicago. I've lived on the west side of Detroit. And like, so I'm aware of certain aspects of the black experience in America from my limited point of view. But then there's someone else who came from Atlanta or lives in Florida, who lives in California, and their experience isn't the same as what mine was. So to act as if because you are from Detroit, and the fact that President Obama was raised by his white parents and that he was also partially raised in Indonesia, that does not mean that his experience in America is any less valid than yours because of who his parents were and where he was brought up, especially when you consider how he embedded himself on the south side of Chicago. So, you know, the black experience isn't a monolithic one, man. And, you know, another thing, too, when it comes to this Carson and these type of statements, it comes at a time where Ben Carson, like I said before, was dead last in the polls. So right now, Ben Carson is trying to generate some sort of attention, some sort of momentum, some sort of support that he hasn't really been getting as of late. You know, his bubble has pretty much burst when it comes to this Republican nomination is concerned. So I think this is the last ditch effort to try to trumpet himself up as the first black president. And this was something that had come up earlier in this before, the notion that he would be the first African-American president or the first black president because President Barack Obama had white parents and he had a white mother and white grandparents. So, yeah, it's petty and it's insidious in a small, well, not even a small way, in a very diabolical fuck you kind of way. You know what I mean? It's fucked up. And then, you know, again, as I said before, like my experience and Barack's experience and I'm sorry, President Obama and Dr. Carson's experience aren't necessarily the same, but there could be an argument for Dr. Carson that the way in which you live and the way in which you speak about black people and black America and this and how it relates to your presidential candidacy, a lot of people can say that you're detached from what a lot of folks would consider the black experience if there ever was a monolithic one, that you don't necessarily represent everything that, you know, some of their struggles entails. Because you're far removed from it now and that you aren't necessarily in touch with it now. You don't necessarily surround yourself with that, you know, with that environment. And that's not to say that because you are a successful person, that you were a world-renowned neurosurgeon, that all of us grew up, especially when I was coming up, reading Gifted Hands. I think a lot of us are disappointed with the man that we see today because it's so far different from what we've grown to know. So, yeah, man, unfortunately... because of those statements that Dr. Ben Carson made, he is the Spin Report asshat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And now we come to the Spin Report champ of the week.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, now, the champ of the week of the Spin Report, man, has to go to the show Black-ish. I'm a very big fan of the show Black-ish, man. it's a very funny, very smart show. And it comes across, it comes on every Wednesday, I believe. And I don't necessarily get a chance to catch it when it's on live, man, but I made a point to, excuse me, I made a point to watch it live, and I was live tweeting it as well as that show was on, man. And it was a, excuse me again, but it was a very important show for the current climate that we live in right now. It was basically talking about police brutality and, you know, the way in which we deal with it, the way in which we kind of wrap our heads around it, and the way in which we explain what's going on to our children. And so what happened this week, man, was a very touching show. It was still funny. They balanced the serious with the funny so well on this particular episode, man. And there was one instance of that show that kind of spoke to, you know, the struggle, so to speak, of how we, it kind of spoke to the struggle of how we deal with telling our children what's really going on, and not, and balancing that with how we give them hope for the future, that they will, that they will come up in a better world, in a better society, in a better America. So here's a clip that was really popular on Twitter, and is still popular out there, like on all the social medias right now. And I'm going to play that here. It was a very pivotal moment in that show. And here we go.
Wake up. Let's say they listen to the cops and get in the car. Look what happened to Freddie Gray.
Yeah, and what if they make it all the way to the station?
Mm-hmm.
You remember Sandra Bland?
And let's say they do make it to trial.
Mm-hmm.
You see where that gets us? Don't you get it, Bo? The system is rigged against us.
Maybe it is, Dre. But I don't want to feel like my kids are living in a world that is so flawed that they can't have any hope.
Oh, so you want to talk about hope, Bo? Obama ran on hope. Remember when he got elected? And we felt like maybe, just maybe, we got out of that bad place and made it to a good place. That the whole country was really ready to turn the corner. You remember that amazing feeling we had during the inauguration? I was sitting right next to you. And we were so proud. And we saw him get out of that limo and walk alongside of it and wave to that crowd. Tell me you weren't terrified when you saw that. Tell me you weren't worried that someone was going to snatch that hope away from us like they always do. That is the real world, Bo. And our children need to know that that's the world that they live in. Finish watching. Let's see what they're gonna say next.
All right, now again, man, that was a very powerful scene, man, and I got the video clip available on thespanreport.com. You guys can go there and check it out for yourself if you want to. But yeah, man, it spoke to a very real sense of hope and a very real sense of terror that I think a collective of Black folks felt, and all at the same time. I remember that day and watching that day, and him getting out of the car and hoping that nothing bad happened to that man and in that family while he got out and waved to the admiring throngs, man, because people loved Obama at that time. I was at the height of his popularity, man. You know what I mean? That was the height of his popularity, the very first Black president of the United States coming out and reaching and talking to and touching the people, man. Folks loved that man at that particular point in time. And there was also a segment of America who loathed that man at that particular moment in time because of what he represented. He represented a different face to America. He represented a different attitude about what America should be and could be. He represented what some would call a socialist. He represented what some would call a Muslim. He represented all of these things that they consider the boogeyman. That he wasn't worthy to be president, so much so that we've seen unprecedented levels of obstruction from the Congress that he deals with, unprecedented levels of threats against that man's life and his family, unprecedented levels of disrespect. When you think about even now, like the fact that the Republican-led Congress, the Senate, and the House of Representatives are not even considering anybody that he presents as a candidate or a nominee for the vacated seat of Justice Antonin Scalia for the Supreme Court. So you see that happen in that moment, and for them to kind of reach back in there and talk about the realities that a lot of African Americans face was very powerful, and I was so appreciative of them for that particular episode. Not only that, man, like I can remember when this show first came out, how so many people, man, didn't even get his show a chance. Didn't even give it a chance, man, because they didn't like the name. And I remember getting into a bit of getting into some debates, man, about this particular thing, because folks were trying to talk about Empire, and how Empire was bad for African Americans, and it's bad for the representation of African Americans, and that we don't necessarily have any positive representations of Black folks on television. And then we would bring up Blackish, the folks were like, well, that's got to be it. But it's a comedy, and it's like, but it's a smart comedy, and it makes you think. It's not just some slapstick shit. And so this goes right back into how I thought of that. You know what I mean? Like, this was, it dealt with something. And this isn't the first time that this show has done it, man. Like, they've dealt with the fact that a lot of African-American men tend to have an aversion to going to the doctor. They've dealt with the fact that how we deal with money. They've dealt with the fact that whether or not Dre should have a gun to protect his family. And so there have been a lot of different ways in which they've tackled some of the issues of a Black family living in a predominantly white suburb and how they navigate that. And it's not a drama, so to speak, but it speaks to some very real issues, and it speaks to some things that are very relevant within the African-American community. So, yeah, man, this week, Blackish is the Span Report champ of the week. Yeah, man. And there was another thing, too, that I wanted to talk about, because normally I would go right into my listener feedback at this portion of the show. But there was another thing that I kind of wanted to speak to. And it was one of those things where I felt like this is important. Because I've been talking about, how we deal with consent, sexual assault, and everything else. And a lot of my talk about that has been kind of centered around what's been going on with Bill Cosby and whatnot. But there's also something else that kind of happened, right? So there was a singer, Kesha, who was trying to get out of a contract with Sony Music because of an alleged sexual assault from a producer. I believe his name was Dr. Luke. And she doesn't want to, of course, she was trying to get out of the contract because she didn't want to have to work with this man who she alleges sexually assaulted her. And her case was denied. She was not able to get out of that contract. Her contract wasn't voided. And so, a lot of people have come out in support of Kesha. I think Taylor Swift has kind of thrown some money at the situation and gave her $250,000 in support. I know there's been a bit of a spat between, what was that, Demi Lovato and, Taylor Swift and all of those other things. But like, what I really want to kind of like focus on is the actual issue at hand, right? And so when I talk about sexual assault and when I talk about consent and everything else, and one of the things we talk about is whether or not, like, we tend to demonize the victim so much in this country or just in the way we talk about these subjects. And sometimes what ends up happening is you'll sometimes have a woman voicing or speaking up on behalf of dominant rape culture, right? And it goes into the whole thing, but just like you'll sometimes have African Americans talking about, you'll have African Americans who kind of perpetuate the narrative of, downtrodden, poor, uneducated, backwards Black folks. And they will go out and they will make money saying these things. And it adds validity to these things to folks who already want to believe that, right? So, Wendy Williams, right? Shock Jock, formerly TV talk show host now, went on her show to say that Kesha should have recorded her rape. Check this out.
What do you think about this, Wendy? unfortunately, business is business, and it sounds like it's fair. You know, if everybody complained because somebody allegedly sexually abused them and was ripping them off, then contracts would be broken all the time, number one. Number two, if she and her mom are so close, and Kesha's no spring chicken. I mean, you know, she's like, what, 30 years old or something like that?
Yeah.
So she wasn't stupid 10 years ago, neither was her mother. When the sexual abuse, alleged sexual abuse, started, why weren't they rolling camera on it? You know, a camera.
Okay, now, I don't know how many people at the time they're being assaulted actually have cameras rolling. And if that's what it takes in order for someone to prove that they were sexually assaulted, then nobody's ever been raped. And so I think it's very dangerous to have people who have that sort of attitude, who believe that we have to have that kind of conclusive proof when it comes to rape. And I get it. We don't want to, we do not want to, you know, lock up and persecute falsely accused men of these things. But at the same time, we have to also acknowledge that when it comes to a crime such as rape, a lot of it tends to go by who has the power, who has the leverage, and who's in a position to just take it. And I don't think it's productive to this conversation to say that unless you've been raped on videotape, this never happened. And we can't just go fall into the, business is business. Well, okay, business is business, but rape doesn't have to be a part of the business. And if rape is a part of the business, then something's very wrong. And to have a woman standing up to say that business is business and this woman should have videotaped her assault is dangerous. It's like we said last week, ignorance is dangerous. That's a dangerous thing to say. And it lends credence to what a lot of fuck motherfuckers would say, like a lot of douchebag ass dudes would say, like, well, shit, she ain't taping, so I ain't rape her. That's consent, dog. Like, nah, man. Nah. So, like, yeah, shit, it's too late, but shit, I would actually add Wendy Williams to the Ass Hat of the Week crew, too. You know what I mean? But, yeah, like, I don't think anybody really expects Wendy Williams to really say anything intelligent. She hasn't said anything really intelligent for quite some time. So, yeah, man, fuck that and fuck her. Yeah, man, but we're coming up on the listener feedback portion of the show. And I got some iTunes reviews to get to, and I also have some emails to read. So let me pull these things up real quick. I'm sorry I didn't have these up already, but I do need to salute those who saluted me and show my appreciation. And while I'm doing that, let me also pull up these emails. Multitasking on the fly. All right. And iTunes is taking forever to load. Okay, let me go to this iTunes store. And of course, this is the only reason why your man Span has iTunes. Okay. Excuse me. All right. Now, where is it? Where is it? I just saw them. Okay, here we go. This first review is from Transit Chick. And Transit Chick, she actually wrote this review on New Year's Eve. Thank you so much, Transit Chick. And I so sincerely apologize for not seeing this and not saying something beforehand, but I really appreciate the 5-star review. And Transit Chick writes in that Mr. Span is honest in his opinion and tells it like it really is. Give him a listen and you will give him 5 stars also. Thank you. Thank you, sister, for looking out and hooking me up with the 5-star review. It's very much appreciated. Helped the show grow, and I thank you so much. Also, Mr. Bizu writes in to say, holding it down all day, every day, 5 stars. The Span Report is one of the top podcasts for me. Thank you. Thank you, man. Real talk. You don't really know how much that means to me. informative, honest, and pretty funny, despite his claims to the contrary. Definitely worth a listen. Thank you, Mr. Bizu, for your 5-star review, man. I really do appreciate it. helps the show grow. And yeah, man, can't do this without you guys, man. Real talk. Like, if there was no listeners, and if there were anybody who were listening to the show who felt that way, there would be no reason for me to continue doing this. So every 5-star review is appreciated, and all your 5-star reviews will be read here on thespanreport.com. I went on Stitcher to also try to see if I had any 5-star reviews on Stitcher. And for whatever reason, man, Stitcher's been going through some changes, man. I don't know what's going on there, but I couldn't even get on Stitcher. Yeah, man, hopefully at some point they'll get that straightened out, and I'll be able to get, you know, whatever reviews that anybody may have left for me on Stitcher as well. But if you can do a review on Stitcher Radio, please do, and I will read those as soon as I'm aware of them. Thank you so much for all of you guys who do that. Okay, now for the emails. I got an email here. This is from tried and true Reggie, man. And Reggie writes in to say, "What's good with you, sir? Just writing in to ask you about Tommy Lauren and the Beyonce death threats made against her. Now, Span, I agree with you on a lot of things, but on this one, I don't really know. It's possible that Tommy has been inundated with death threats after Beyonce fans got wind of her video. The Beehive can be a pretty rabid bunch, and I think to discount that possibility is a little irresponsible on your part, brother. Additionally, it's very well possible that the way in which she may have handled those who were responsible for the threats may have been done privately. Just something to consider, Reggie." Yeah, man. I actually kind of spoke a little bit to this earlier. I'm not discounting whether or not Tommy Lauren may have gotten death threats. The only thing that I really was trying to allude to was the fact that she came at Beyonce publicly. She made all of her statements about Beyonce publicly. She made statements about these death threats publicly. I kind of felt like she could kind of be consistent with the airing out of the people who were allegedly threatening her life. You know what I mean? Threatening her life. I mean, so if these people were doing that, we shouldn't give folks that kind of cover. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I feel about it. Like, especially in this day and age, like when it comes to the internet, I think a lot of times folks get behind their computer and they get behind their phones, and their anonymity gives them this courage to say things they wouldn't normally say. And so you'll say something that you wouldn't normally say. You'll say something really fucked up, and then you feel like there's no consequences behind it. And so the airing out, so to speak, kind of gives you that level of knowing that there are going to be some consequences behind some of this shit that you say that you wouldn't necessarily say if you were around someone in the real world. So that's why I felt like if you're going to say that these people are threatening your life and the life of your family and everything else, and you're going to air these people out and you're going to keep talking about this, because at the end of the day, I really believe that was about self-promotion for Tommy Lauren when it came to her show. She even said so when she said, well, after, and this is only after the second episode, she's like, yeah, I came at the Beehive and my numbers went up, you know, good, great for a second show. So it kind of tied into her whole thing of, okay, I got this attention now because I said something about Beyonce, but let me also shut down these people who are telling me that I was wrong about what I said. And I can do that by saying, hey, these people are threatening my life and they're threatening to kill me. So when folks are asking you, hey, can you actually produce any of these postings that were put on social media? Because we live in a day of the screenshot age, man. Everything's screenshot. Even the DMs are screenshotted, right? So giving these people that level of cover, I think, is dangerous also, man. Like, if these people are out here perpetuating this type of behavior, then go ahead and put them on blast, man. And you can still handle that in a very private, you know, I mean, those things can still be handled behind the scenes, but also let folks know, hey, this is the kind of person that this guy is. He says these types of things when he thinks nobody's watching. He thinks this is okay to say to folks when nobody's watching him. So I think it's very important that we just don't give these type of people cover, because again, the social media age has given so many people, so many cowardly motherfuckers, the agency to say so many foul things they wouldn't normally say to you while they were in your face, man. So, yeah, but I appreciate you, Reggie. And like I said, you ain't gotta always agree with me. We're not gonna always agree. That's not realistic. But I appreciate the fact that you are respectfully disagreeable with me. That's the entire point of why we do this here at the Span Report, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, it's time for me to get out of here. But before we get out, I gotta let you guys know again, remind you guys how to get in touch with me here at the Spin Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard, man. Hit me up on that hotline. The very voicemail hotline is area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages, man, so I can play them on the show and respond to you. You can also email the show just like Reggie just did and hit me up. feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails, and of course I'll reply to those emails just like I just did with Reggie. You can also leave me a 5-star review, preferably on iTunes and or Stitcher. The 5-star reviews are the only ones that get read here on the show. Those reviews help the show grow. So do me that solid if you're listening to the show, man. I really would appreciate it. 5-star reviews and or on Stitcher and or iTunes. And also you can subscribe to the show on Spreecast. There's somebody watching right now. They haven't said anything, but somebody's watching right now. So you can subscribe to the show on Spreecast, watch the shows live, participate in the live shows, man. It's really fun. And I implore you guys to really do that, man. It really kind of helps this shit move, right? And for all of your Spin Report needs, man, go to thespinreport.com, www.thespinreport.com, and get all of your Spin Report needs met right there, your one-stop shop. All Spin Report, man. But I got to get out of here, man. I'll talk to you guys soon. So until next time, fam. Peace.